Hello, friends. Welcome back to the mentality of combat sports. I was going to say the mentality of podcast sports, but I don't think that. Maybe it does. Maybe it requires some sort of mental training. But David Mullins, sports psychology consultant, and Robin Black, fight guy. And we talk about, anything related to mindset and preparation and training and the mental training. You've probably seen this show before, and if you haven't, welcome. And if you have, maybe we'll read one of your questions later. Yeah.
Got loads again.
Yeah.
And the quality of the questions is just getting better and better.
It's a really, really cool thing. And this doesn't just apply to mentality stuff. But these days, ideas of any kind, wherever you get them, whether we got them, we read something somewhere, or we shared it or whatever, ideas can spread so fast. And things that you didn't know 6 months ago can become a very standard part of your thinking.
Yeah, sure. That's happening constantly with technology and ideas, like you're saying. It just spreads now. Like it before, it'd be in a book, and that book will either be read or not.
Yeah.
And someone might see it and talk to someone else about it, but now you can just get ideas across the world in minutes.
And I know this. You've worked in this field for years now. But you have to take in your own bias of how you read information. And the more you know, the more you pay attention to things that you're aware of. But are you seeing there's almost a bit of a exponential type growth of the amount of fighters that when they're talking about fighting and about training, they're talking about mental stuff compared to 2 years ago and 3 years ago?
100% there is. There's a lot more. I think it's just becoming a lot more accepted. Mm-hmm. There was guys when I started working in MMA. I know there was fighters working on their mental game, but now it's you hear it in like Bisping talked about it during his 200 commentary, and Misha Tate and different champions and have talked about the work they've done in their mental game and the way people are talking about their preparation and everything. It's just grown all the time, and it's. There's still some bullshit out there, though.
Yeah.
Lots of it.
And yeah, wasn't Misha talking about being hypnotized?
Yeah, she
but
was.
It might, I didn't hear the entire thing, but my assumption was that what she was calling hypnosis might be just called sort of walking through something. Like,
I think he's a like
a hypnotist.
What people think of hypnosis, though, is different to what hypnotherapy really is. Like, it is a legit therapy, and it has been proven in research to be effective in certain things like phobias or even pain and stuff like that. It helps, but it's not you're getting sleepy, very sleepy. Right. It's not that. It's just you're awake, you're aware, but they got you in such a relaxed state that you can. The idea is that the communication is to your subconscious instead of your conscious mind. Now, I have a bit of a problem with it. You have to be wary of it as the only form of mental training because it's passive.
Right.
You know, you're just sitting there and he's telling you how you're going to react in a situation and how it's going to be. But it's taken responsibility away a little bit. You know, my subconscious is going to look after this. Once the fight ticks in, I'll be fine because I've told my subconscious how to think. It's going to just react conditionally.
I spent, $300 a session on 25 sessions of hypnotherapy, so I'm good to go.
Yeah, and so I'm not saying it's not legit because it is, it's proven, but only in certain situations and not as the lone and only form of mental preparation. Now, I don't know, and I'm not having a go at Misha's guy or anything like that because I don't know what that guy does or others like him.
Or if what she described was that, or even her wording was just really, when you walk through something and you relax and walk through the day.
I saw it on the embedded.
Oh.
I saw her lying and him talking to her. So that's where I know it's what I thought it was. Mm. It is useful. But I'm wary of it because it is so passive and you have to have a bit more about your mental prep than just hypnosis. It can be part of it. I personally don't, I'm not trained and I don't do it at all with anyone. Mm-hmm. But I can see the benefits in some areas, but I can see the drawbacks if it's the lone thing, 100%. Yeah. And if you have this idea that I'm going to be good because I've been hypnotized to react a certain way, or I'm going to think a certain thing. Once I get in, I'm just going to feel this confidence and all the positive stuff. You're kind of taking away your part to play in that.
Right.
You know?
And if the only thing you do to train to fight is throw kicks, that won't be good. You'll be good at throwing kicks, but you won't be good at fighting.
Yeah.
And it would be the same thing. If we need to train throwing kicks, but we also need to train cage work and 1,000 other things. We could train some guided meditation all the way through to hypnosis or whatever range of that. But if that's the only thing we do, we are a good kicker and we can't do anything else.
Yeah, yeah. It's very similar. And one of the things she was talking about a lot in the build-up was that the reason she's going to beat Amanda Nunes is because she's mentally tougher.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a constant.
Right.
You know, the idea that she's mentally tougher than Amanda, if you look at the body of work, you could say, yeah, that's probably true. Like, Misha's shown so much mental toughness in the Holly fight alone.
Historically, yeah, she has. Yeah.
But on that night, on that given night, or in the preparation for that fight, you can't just say, I'm mentally tougher than her. Because it's taken away what you need to do now to be mentally tough in this fight. It's not, you're just not constantly mentally tough. It's like you're not constantly in good shape, right, conditioning-wise, like fitness-wise or whatever. Just because you've done 5 rounds at a good pace like Demetrius Johnson or someone or Dominic Cruz doesn't mean that you're going to do it next time. You have to put in the work. You can't just get out of shape
and then say, I'm fitter than them.
Yeah, it's not the reason why you're going to be able to do it this time. You have to still put in the work and be conditioned to go again. And so the idea that you're mentally tougher than her, we don't know that going into this fight.
We need to make that so.
Yeah.
And how do we make that so? It's through work and preparation and all those other things. I was just thinking about when you said that's not a constant.
Yeah.
She would say, I weigh 135 pounds, but that's not a constant.
Yeah.
You weigh whatever you weigh based on what you ate and what exercise you did. Then I was like, well, she is 5'6". But actually, at different times during the day, you go up and down a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, there's almost nothing in people that's a constant.
Very
like, your
cute,
eyes are blue, but there are different kinds of blue at different times, depending on the lighting. Like, if you really think about it, there are very few constants in what a person is.
And especially if you add in all the variables involved in the mental game and opponents and... For like, Misha got caught with a good shot and it just snowballed from there and the finish came kind of quickly after that. So she might have got caught with that shot anyways. It's not about she didn't fight through this one and she did the last time. So that's not what we're saying. But if there was any part of her preparation that caused her to not perform to her best and some of that was mental, then it's worth exploring for her.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're saying.
Right. Whereas if you say, we've been over this a lot of times, but the idea, I just got caught, is a very, it gives you no positive results whatsoever. There's no positive to be taken from, I just got caught.
Yeah.
You're just saying, next time it'll be different, but you're not going to change anything.
Yeah. Now, only she knows how much she was affected by all the variables, even in that week alone where she's the main event of 200 now. Like, that might have been a big factor in terms of her mindset going into that fight. It might never have been addressed. It might have been addressed. It might not have been addressed. All we can do is speculate. That's what this show is.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But maybe it did affect her. Maybe it wasn't addressed. All the different stuff that's going on. So the idea that you're mentally tougher, it's bullshit. It's not.
Yeah.
You can't say that because you don't know what this situation is going to be, how you're going to be. You need to be putting in the work.
We started talking about saying, like, the average discussion or fighter admitting it or awareness level of what mental preparation is, what being free and at your best in the moment is, all of these different things have become very public, you know, which is a good thing. But as that happens, it's something Ramdeen and I were talking about the other day when it comes to technical things. As that happens, there are certain people that would do great by keeping things a secret. Okay, we know things about how footwork works. Let's not tell anyone. Let's just make our athletes do it. Or we know things about how to prepare mentally for a fight that will give a fight, that will help a fighter be at their best. Let's keep that secret. But when those things aren't kept secret and they start being spread, everybody starts, the general awareness of the of what the topic is or what the idea is grows. When that happens, it creates kind of an interesting arms race. Mm-hmm. If everybody has a general idea of how to prepare, of how to journal, of how to be to search to be in your optimum performance, if they have general ideas for that, then the people who will be able to do better than that have to know more and be able to implement it better. And then once everybody understands that, then people need to innovate. Trial and error innovation. And that's what's so interesting to me about in modern times, whatever the topic is, if we take a bunch of information and we share it and most people start to gather it, not we as in you and I mean the royal we as in anybody, and things share and spread, it forces innovation. Because you knew something I didn't know a week ago. But if we both kind of know it, you need to know it first better, and then you need to know and innovate new ideas. And that – we're at a point where this is not going to be a flavor of the moment where people are talking about their mindset, and this is going to be built on.
Yeah, 100%. The baseline has come up from where it was. You can see that now with like those fights last night in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. The prelims were better than the main cards were – X number of years ago. Far better. The quality of fighters. Now, I'm not just talking about the fights to watch. I'm talking about the quality, the skills, the fighters. It's much
and the
better.
Coaches.
Yeah.
The global understanding, the feel of the game itself. But I mean, that shouldn't surprise us. The, you know, grade 12 baseball players are way better than Major League Baseball players of 50 years ago.
Yeah, the baseline just keeps going up and up and up and up. And if some are going to be left behind because they're going to deny certain things, or you know they're going to get, that's just their fixed mindset or whatever. But those that are growing, definitely the mental game is a part of it for like in a major, major way. And there's things within every fight then that, like, we'll get to Aldo, I'm sure.
Yeah, literally, I was just, I try not to do this, try not to think about what I want to add next. I've been really working on that, but I literally was just thinking, I got to get to Aldo as soon as we're done with this topic.
But it ties in so well with what we're talking about with Misha and lessons from this fight. He could have done, I just got caught. Conor caught me before I caught him. He got a lucky shot. But he didn't do that.
No. He sort of there's many things that were brilliant about him. And it's been – and I showed you – I was just watching in slow-mo back on it. There's so many things about it that were brilliant, and that shows you how truly brilliant he is, that's in some of which we have forgotten and some of which he forgotten. But among them was he misdirected too. He was out there saying, oh, I just got caught. Oh, I'm going to get this. I'll be the old Aldo. I got to wash the taste of that thing. He wasn't really doing any of that.
No.
He was really actually growing and evolving and redesigning himself.
Yeah, he wasn't. Like, I've heard it even since that some people have said it's back to the old Aldo. It's a newer version of him, himself, and an improved version of himself. And it's directly because of that experience he had in the fight with Conor, in the build up to it, in the fight itself, the aftermath, having to deal with that. You could see the emotion in him after the fight. You could hear him talking, and it's not that I lost, it's who I lost to, and how much that hurt him and everything. It really hurt, but he was honest about it, and there was more to do with it than just getting caught with a lucky shot. He's grown, he's improved, and he comes back in. And one of the questions we got from Trevor Stanley.
Yeah.
Aldo's laser beam focus would be another topic for discussion I'd love to hear you guys talk about. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it felt like to me on the night, is he was just focused in on that moment. He was he was in that state of mind where he was in flow state.
Yeah.
It took him a part of the first round to get into
Did
that.
Did you see the end of the round? He just was...
Yeah.
Oh my God, I am Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
Do you remember that moment? Like it was so clear to me that there was intimidation and fear and hesitation and doubt, because he's a human being.
Yeah.
And he moved towards it. And by the end of that round, he was like, I'm fucking Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
Like, and I think somewhere in there, he became a thing this left heavy left hook, which now he used moving backwards and timed and circled off of, and a low kick and forward pressure and aggression and tougher than you. And he limited himself down and limited down his menu and stuff over time. And that was working until one day he was like, wait a second, I'm not just these things. I'm Jose Aldo. I'm only 29 years old. I'm one of the best fighters ever. And the best fighter ever isn't the best fighter because he fights this way. He's the best fighter ever because he fights whatever way he needs to fight. Mm-hmm. It really was unreal. Like, that is as brilliant of a performance when you contextualize everything. And the misdirection, understanding that the words you say to some tomato cans from MMApage.net, when they put a thing there, is not – the purpose isn't to answer their question. The purpose is whatever purpose you give it.
Yeah.
Like, so the way he talked about things, the way he said things that would make others, including potentially Frankie, whether it worked or not, potentially Frankie, think he was going to come in a different way than he came in.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it surprised Frankie and Mark Henry and everyone involved in that team that the approach Aldo had and the way he fought and the extra stuff he had added into his game. Because they would have had, like we talked about it in the preview of that fight, that looking at Barão against TJ and how Barão was just, again, it was just Barão.
Same
approach, yeah. same preparation and everything. So maybe Jose learned from that experience as well as his own experience. Like, who knows, but that would make sense. But for Aldo to have prepared for the or for Frankie to have prepared for the Aldo he fought the first time, and the idea that Aldo's declining now and I'm on the streak, I'm on the way up, then he was in for a big shock, and that would have would have affected him while the fight's happening too. You're not supposed to be doing this stuff, you know.
There were little bits of frustration. I don't know if it's round one or two, and he gets cut and he goes, you know, or like he was. It took him two rounds to realize he'd been bamboozled.
Yeah.
Round one, it's just like, I'll get to him. Okay, I'm learning. I'm figuring out what's going on here. I just got to push a little harder. And Jose made a game that if you pushed harder, you were falling into his trap. The harder you pushed, the more you were falling into his trap. And by round three, it's like, this guy's not slowing down. This is not working. Frankie, there was somewhere between halfway through round three and three quarters of the way through round four that he either won a round or he won two parts of a round, but that was all he was going to get. It really was amazing. And it's like, it was a perfect example of how easy it is to misunderstand somebody, for them to make you misunderstand you, because he played a role in it, and for you to just be missing information or to project an idea. Frankie is the one that's growing. Here's all the evidence.
Yeah.
Jose, well, yes, you know, he's been the same for a long time and he got knocked out. So, you know, I don't know if he can keep up with Frankie. That's just a narrative. That's not clearly wasn't the truth.
No.
But once Aldo realized that was a narrative that some people could think, he did not work in any way to change that narrative, because it served him.
Yeah, for sure it did. And you have to, like, I was watching that fight and I was loving it, like, obviously from a technical standpoint and everything, but just mentally knowing what that guy had gone through, how much that would have hurt the way he lost his belt that he's had for so long and who he lost it to and all the drama of that fight and the preparation to it and then that moment to happen. And just seeing him sitting in the cage after the fight and seeing him backstage afterwards, having to go home and deal with that, to build himself back up, what was it?
Better than ever.
7 months later or whatever it was. It's a huge achievement. It really is, because it took more than just the technical improvements and the advancements in his game. It took the mental fortitude and resolve to get to the point where you're able to go and work on stuff and then go and carry it out. It really was an incredible performance.
Yeah. The things that make people successful when they're just sort of that who they are and stays who they are instead of allowing that to change. Sometimes, like, he got successful by sleeping on the gym, working 8 hours a day, working harder than anyone else, doing more hard sparring. Work harder, harder, push, 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 drive, drive, will it to be so. If he did that after this loss, it wouldn't have worked. That idea, well, I just got to train harder. I just got to fight harder. He'd have injured himself like he used to. There's a million things that could happen if he just stayed the course, only harder. If he did the same thing, only pushed more. He had to change. You know, he had to change how he looked at it, how he approached it, how he physically fought, how he mentally fought. That, to me, is the incredible thing. It would be so easy to just go, I'm better than that. I'm better than this. People didn't get to see it. Wait till they see how hard I work. Or the things that got you there, you have to have new things to get them to this step.
Yeah, and then, like, the question from Trevor about the focus during the fight itself, because there's a lot of emotional control that was going on in that fight because he's back in there first time he's back in since. So the emotions would have been there and you could almost see them before the fight and early on in the fight even. Early first round, you could see the emotion that was there a little bit. That little bit of caution, a little bit of tenseness. But to get past all of that, to manage those emotions in the moment and staying cool and just go and execute your performance, it was really impressive.
Yeah.
So what else we got kicking around in here in the world of questions? It's been cool. Thank you for sending us these questions. And, you know, they literally get smarter all the time.
Yeah. There was one, we've kind of touched on it a little bit with Misha already, but it's such a good question to ask. And it's a good way of looking at the whole thing. Anthony Sheriff, did Tate move into the main event on 2 days' notice on the biggest card ever, take her focus off her performance? And like we said, that could have been a factor for sure for her. He deserves, like, for that good of a question, he deserves to get mentioned.
But yes,
there's lots, like, did being champion affect her performance? Defending her belt for the first time affect her performance? There's loads of different things. And yes, they could have.
Yeah.
All of them could be a factor. We don't know. There's other performances, too, where you look at, like, DC's against Anderson Silva. And these are linked. Someone asked, what a roller coaster of mental preparation for DC.
Those are linked, for sure.
Yeah, what would you actually do in those extreme moments where the Jones fight, it's been building and he's getting ready for John Jones. Boom, it's over. It's gone. Just like that. Nothing, no fault of your own. It's over. Yeah. And we could see the emotion in him. And then we still want to get you a fight. And then it's Anderson Silva. And you're not main event anymore. Yeah. You're down the card now, and it's Anderson Silva. And it's not, you're not defending your belt anymore. Yeah.
You're getting half the money.
Yeah, you're not getting near as much money. Yeah. All those kind of stuff.
And by the way, you haven't taken in many nutrients for the last 4 days.
Yeah.
And you're dehydrated. And the weight cut has always been an issue for you. Aren't you hungry right now? Are you thirsty? Maybe, what if we just cheat a little on that?
Yeah.
Like, I just eat just a couple gummy bears, I'll feel better.
Yeah. There's a lot going on in that moment. And the question kind of was, what would you actually do in those extreme moments? And it ties into Misha, too, getting the main event slot at that short notice. And some people take that stuff, like, whatever, the money stuff aside, but just the prestige of being the main event of that big card, some people just whatever.
Yeah.
And some people take that as, it's a big, big deal and all it means and everything. What I would do in that situation with those, with fighters in those kind of situations, we would talk about those things, you know? Because DC even mentioned himself, he had a moment in the fight where he's like, this is Anderson Silva. You know, because you grow up watching Anderson Silva. You're a fan of Anderson Silva. You think, my God, that guy's amazing, what he can do. It's superhuman. And then you're standing across the cage from him. It's too late to have that moment now once the fight's on and you're in there looking at him. You can't have that moment right now. You have that moment once the fight's announced and we go through the new story of this fight now. It's Anderson Silva. What does that mean to you? You know, what does the opponent mean? What springs to mind when you think of that opponent? That's one of the questions that I ask guys. Yeah. What does that opponent mean to you? What do you think of him? What do you think of her? It's a good question to ask, and it gets that stuff out now so then we can see it and deal with it rather than it in the middle of the fight or early in the fight. You feel it.
This is a bit off the track, but it's something you were just saying just a few seconds ago. So you ask me, I'm a 26-year-old fighter who's, you know, growing, and you ask me what my opponent means to me, and I lie to you. What's part of your job when I'm lying? So I say, he's just a body, he's nothing, he's just, all this guy is just the next win for me, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you do now? Because your clients have to lie to you sometimes, especially newer ones that don't, they have to...
Sure. It's like, that can genuinely be the way they feel about it.
Yeah.
But if it is, then that'll stand up to the next little series of questions, you know? So you'll have, so what about his record, or, you know, like... What do you think about that?
Or? You know, I beat undefeated guys. I mean, I've never beat an undefeated guy, but, you know, he's just a 5-0 guy. But it looked good on my record to beat him.
Yeah, and his camp or his team and the guys he's training with.
I don't care about Jackson, Winkle, John. They're just another team. I mean, so how's my guy doing? I'm playing that role.
Yeah, and like... That sounds like a guy who's hiding stuff. That's the role you're playing.
Yeah, because
and you're a terrible actor.
I'm lying right now. Yeah, I'm a terrible actor. But so then you now determine, according to your feeling, that I'm probably lying. What's your job now?
So then we can talk about the past experiences against similar kind of fighters. Mm-hmm. I'll bring in vicarious experiences of fights, famous fights. Mm-hmm. Sometimes like. This example of, you know, this fight where...
Venata stepped in on short notice.
Perfectly, what I was just going to say. Tony Ferguson, it's a perfect example, you know, it really is. Yeah. Where there's been cases like that where guys step in on short notice, who's really a featherweight fighting a top four-ranked lightweight in the world and all this kind of stuff. And if you... easy fight kind of stuff, you know, you can call on those examples... For the current fight with my guy hang on, there's more to it than that. You need to, you know, you need to make sure your mindset, you never take anything for granted. You're not being complacent or whatever. You've been honest about what you're feeling. You know, his record is, he is undefeated. He's coming from a really good team. Say that's the scenario. Mm-hmm. Okay. What does that really mean? And then we dig a little deeper into what that really means so that we get to the point where they're genuinely not bothered really about who the opponent is. And it is just, you know, a body type with a skill set in there. There's no emotional attachment to who they are. Or they're not putting them on a pedestal that they don't deserve
or
to be on.
Or putting them beneath them.
Yeah.
There was something that I enjoyed that Groovy Lando. He moved really interesting for – and, you know, there's other guys that move that way. But his relaxed nature, it was very cool.
Yeah.
He said in the days earlier, and again, I mean, he's not going to be an expert at manipulating media on 2 days' notice with only 8 fights, never been interviewed by big things before, but you can't read everything into what they say, but he said, Tony Ferguson's very predictable. He's very predictable, and that's how I'm going to take advantage of him, which is not true. Tony Ferguson is not predictable. Now, my thinking when I heard that is, and I've seen the kid fight before, is I'm unpredictable. And that's how I beat these guys. Tony Ferguson isn't like that. He's predictable and I'm not. Where the truth of the matter was, I'm unpredictable fighting a guy who's pretty unpredictable. And I've never done that before.
Yeah.
To me, that was the truth that he wasn't discussing or putting out there. You know, Tony Ferguson was the most unpredictable fighter they fought. Different than him in how he expresses his skills, but similar to him in that he does unpredictable things. And I don't think he accepted that truth, really.
Yeah, and that's possible. But you want to get to the point where it doesn't really matter whether everyone should be unpredictable to you. Every opponent should be unpredictable because if you're going in and you think you know, and then Cain Velasquez throws a spin and kick at you, it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
So they should all be unpredictable, really. Mm. You know, that's the way you want to get to. If you are doing that thing where he's just predictable, he's just, and you're denying his skill set because you want to put him down a little bit or make him easier to beat, then that's not. That projection that you would have of the opponent, that's your confidence. And so we need to talk about that, what's really going on there with the confidence that you need to make this an easier task than it is. You know, let's live in the reality. This is whatever difficult, difficult task here, difficult
challenge. It's a professional
challenge.
Fighter trying to knock you out in front of your mom.
Yeah.
That's very challenging.
It's not predictable. It's a live situation. But how do you deal with that? You go and do your best thing. He did that, though. The kid did so well.
He did.
Such a great performance.
It was great. It was really great. And I just looked at that. And again, there's a lot of other reasons you say things. But I got the feeling that he was just a little off. But, you know, if the loss that is going to be a key to turning the corner is in a $50,000 winning night where you did your thing on a couple days' notice or a week or two notice and made a mark in the UFC, well, we're going to get better because of that thing. And it worked out pretty well, except for the fact that you're in a lot of pain now and you lost. He learned a lot from it, I'm sure.
100%. Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. He's with a good team.
Yeah.
And he's with a good coach. like Brandon specifically, but mm-hmm. he's got a good team around him there, mm-hmm. so that environment should help make sure that he does learn from the experience mm-hmm. and what happened, you know, second round or whatever, where he slowed down a little bit and the movement kind of went away or whatever. But yeah, he has a chance to really, like, who wasn't excited to watch him fight again now? Anyone who watched that fight is can't wait to see him again. So that's a good spot to be in.
Yeah, it's true. So what else from there did you want to... We have other questions we want to talk about. But was there anything else on 200? I mean, probably some of our questions will link to that, right?
Yeah, like the obvious one, Mr. Jones.
Right.
Because it's not just that he failed a drug right. test. There's a lot of mental stuff going on there, too. Mm-hmm. This is from... I want to pronounce this badly, but Bharat Saunani.
Saunani?
Yeah. So John Bones Jones, the mayhem. How will it affect him going forward? And that's a good word to describe his career, his situation, mayhem. Mm-hmm. We talked about him before with the hit and run.
Yeah.
And we touched on the idea back then of the halo effect, where people tend to expect everything in a person's life to be great because they're great at something. Like he's a great athlete, he's a great fighter. So then there's this assumption that he's going to be a great person as well. Why? Yeah.
Great at knitting and great at church and a great leader and a great brother and all those things.
Yeah. But it's only there because of that bias, that halo effect bias. So I don't know what you think about the whole situation.
My first thought is that you really, really hope that he is seeking assistance and advice and counsel and whatever from good people and or just genuine, that he's shown signs of desire for self-improvement. But you just hope that he's not left to his own devices, because his own devices are not working.
Yeah.
So that he has somebody he talks to. I mean, I'm sure if he's been sober other than these tainted supplements. Also, that one, can't we just agree that's a stupid excuse now? Especially when you got a result. You didn't compare any supplements. You didn't, well, it must be tainted supplements. Maybe somebody poisoned you. Yeah. Like, if we're going to list a million, if we're going to make up excuses, we can't just make up the same one Yoel Romero used because you have the same manager.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And go to it automatically. It must be tainted supplements. Well, it could be tainted water. It could be somebody put something in there. It could be in your food. Mm-hmm. Like, it could be in the atmosphere. Like, it could be a million things. So why is it the thing that you're, this is off topic a little bit, but also he had a crisis manager there, a crisis management consultant. And I don't like that for a guy's growth as much. This is how we manage your public perception.
How we spin it.
Yeah, exactly. Spinning public perception and prioritizing that in a life of, I've made a lot of mistakes and I want my life back.
Yeah.
Hiring somebody to go listen. And what I'll tell you exactly what they say. They say, just anything that will create possible doubt or even debate over whether or not you did it, and then show lots of real emotion.
Yeah.
That's the advice they give you.
Yeah.
So then you can go out and say, well, my manager said to say tainted supplement, and I'm going to now cry. And then some people freak out. The truth is, it's possible that it was a tainted supplement, but we know athletes lie. And for some reason, human beings make the same mistakes hundreds of times. Every athlete who says they didn't do it, most of them eventually get caught. So anyways, that's off track a little bit, but figuring out how
it isn't, because it kind of ties in with just the idea that the lack of responsibility that's still there. If you have a crisis manager, that means there's a crisis coming. Why else would you be paying her salary? So why not, like, crisis prevention instead of crisis management? Why not, like...
It's figure out not how to have less or no crises in the future instead of figure out how to make this one go away and then let's start again, likely to make more crises.
And that's why the whole thing of he's changing and you know he's gone back to Jesus now and everything's going to be okay and all that stuff that was being said in the since the hit and run and saying and doing all the right things.
Yeah.
You can't judge people on their words or their tweets, you know? You have to judge them on their actions. Yeah. And this is just another example of kind of to me, it goes further than cheating. It's a lack of respect kind of issue as well, where yeah. you like, it's not just you you've let down there. Never, no, whatever about your opponent and the promotion, but it's your coaches as well, and it's your team. You know, you've let them yeah. people down too, and there's going to be a ban now for what, I presume 2 years, right? Yeah.
So, you've let yourself down. There.
Yeah,
you've hurt people. Now, to which some people might hear this part of the conversation and go, "Yeah, but he might not have done it."
Yeah,
but that is also, it's also our responsibility. Actually, it isn't. We can do whatever we want. It's free. We're free. We don't have responsibilities to learn the truth. We have the choice if we want to learn the truth. But statistically speaking, of all of these dozens and dozens of athletes who have come up with the one excuse that the audience seems to accept or creates enough doubt, none of them have ever successfully sued a company. Who has, so now your career is damaged for good. You've lost your potential to earn all kinds of incomes, damaged your, all of those things because you took this supplement that my company makes. You should be able to sue me. You should be able to go after me. It never happens.
Yeah.
Most of the time we don't even hear what the thing is. People put, oh, well, they tested it and it had that. Who said?
Yeah.
Your manager said that. Most of this stuff is a knee-jerk reaction. If you see the movie Merchants of Doubt on Netflix,
it's
brilliant.
Yeah.
This just outlines how this is done, the steps that you use to do this.
Just create enough doubt.
If out of 100 athletes, is it possible that two of them, managed by the same guy who said the exact same things, both happened to take supplements even after one did? And wouldn't you then go to your guys and go, guys, no supplements?
Yeah.
Most of it is nonsense anyways. Here's the data on it. These supplements, other than a touch of creatine, although if you're lifting, you don't require it, some branched chain amino acids and a couple other things, none of which are ever tainted. Don't take any of this other shit. Could cost you millions of dollars in 2 years of your life. You wouldn't take it.
Yeah.
What idiot would do that?
Yeah.
You know, so logically, can we come out and say definitively the guy cheated? No, you can't. But is it far more likely than not that he did? Of course it is.
Yeah,
it
is.
You know, of course
there's,
it
there's,
is.
I don't know what the, I don't know the full story with the Tim Means case or what happened there. Mm. But even something, if there was a genuine case where a guy genuinely didn't know what was going on and it is mm-hmm. someone else's fault, whatever, that then just gives further weight to the little bit of doubt that the future examples put out there. And it's like, well, it happened to that guy, so it is possible that it happened to him.
The one thing about the Tim Means one is when you look up that particular substance that is rare, you would be safe to bet you wouldn't test for it. Its properties are incredible. It's like it'll aid with recovery. It'll help with the loss of weight while maintaining lean muscle. Like every single result you look at it and go, damn, that would be a good thing to take if I was training and fighting in mixed martial arts. And nobody ever usually tests for it. So just that environment, it's never like this weird banned substance that's kind of for pregnant mothers that just happened. It's always something very highly performance enhancing. In Jones's case, Chael came out and said, oh, I just think Chael is absolute genius. It's by all means, you can hate him as an entertainer, and that's what he's doing all the time. But he literally comes out and he says, because he did the opposite. He literally said, yeah, I did all this stuff.
You got
me. I accept responsibility. You got me. Which is off the beaten track of what these guys do, but logically so off the beaten track that people are like, why don't these guys all just come out and say, yeah, I did it. We were in an environment where we did it. But he said that he had the inside track that it was an estrogen blocker.
Yeah.
If it's an estrogen blocker, what the hell is it doing? Some supplement that nobody should be taking if you're actually a fighter. But its real purpose is when your testosterone goes up, your estrogen goes up. And when you get off juice and your testosterone goes down, your estrogen is high, which is negative for performance and may or may not give you actual breasts.
Yeah.
So then you take the estrogen blocker to drop it
back
down.
Yeah, that's what I when Chael said that on Rogan's podcast, I was immediately like, why would someone take that? And then I looked it up and it's like you take it at the end of your steroid cycle.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah. Anyways, it's sad. Like,
it is. It's a repeat kind of a thing. And we're not shocked by that.
No.
You know, like if someone said to me the night it broke, whatever night it was, Thursday night or whatever it was. And I was like, ah, shit. Because I was really looking forward to that fight.
Yeah.
And it's like, if someone had told me, okay, you get three guesses for fighter on the main card of 200, it's going to, he might have been my second guess, but he would have been in my top two for sure. And that's not because of previous steroid issues or whatever, but it's just because you can't be shocked by this behavior from someone who keeps doing that stuff over and over again.
So let's, this is all related. It's a question. It's also related to, trying to improve, because fighting, as in all things in life, part of the journey is learning more, improving, and getting better. And this poor – and I say poor guy because although we have free will – do we have free will? Do you know what I mean? It's like on some level, there's a certain amount of environment and genetic programming. Ram Dean would easily argue, he's like, you just got to get your shit together, bro.
Yeah.
You know, like Ram Dean's take is, if you're doing something wrong, stop doing something wrong. But then there would be nobody working in any type of job that assists people learning how to not do things wrong. There would be no business or culture around people making errors if all it took was to stop making them.
Yeah.
But what is, and not necessarily in this case, to correct myself, but in the case whether we see it on an acute level, like one fight, or in a bigger system of your life level, like potentially John Jones, what is the concept of self-sabotage? What's going on when somebody's self-sabotaging?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It does depend on the individual a lot. It can be like so many different reasons as to the root cause of it all. But what is happening is just basically making things harder for yourself. And whether that's because of feeling like you don't want to feel the pressure that you're feeling, of having to keep living up to expectations and being that guy. And then so you basically, instead of it failing, you just make it fail so that you don't have to deal with it anymore, so it goes away.
Right. And we've seen that athletes have it later admitted in their life they've intentionally injured themselves so they didn't have to play football anymore.
We've
actually seen it to that level.
Yeah, for sure. So it can happen. Or like it can be like real deep-rooted stuff where you don't feel like you deserve the success you're getting, so you sabotage it. Mm-hmm. And what maybe is going on more in this case is it's a learned behavior where you fuck up. Nothing happens really.
Yeah.
And you just get back to where you were. Yeah. So you start to think that you're above certain things and regular kind of standards don't really apply to you anymore. You're above all that stuff. And we touched on that before with him even. So it's like the rules don't apply to me a little bit. So maybe it's not sabotage then. It's more just feeling like you're above things.
Have you ever seen this sort of theory that too much stability will inherently lead to instability? So we look at Jones as an example. Stability will lead to overconfidence, which will lead to a euphoria of, I can do whatever I want, which creates instability, which creates failure and a bottom, like we've seen with him. But inevitably, forgiven, coming back, and get to a place of stability again, which will naturally once again lead to either overconfidence or trying too hard to overprotect what you have or something that ultimately leads to irrational behavior and leads to instability.
We've seen it like on mass levels with empires. You know, that's how they collapse over history. That's
economies do exactly
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
economies,
yeah.
That's an economic theory that stability leads to instability, that there's a crash and then the crash causes the culture to go, oh my God, that was traumatic.
How did that happen?
Mm. We need to create some
regulations in place, protect everything.
Yeah, stop.
And then everything's fine. Phew,
it's fine. Let's get back to trading things for way too much money
and
let's create a bubble again. It's not a bubble. We're good. But it happened before. No, it didn't. You guys are nuts.
This is different.
Exactly. And then that happens, creates instability, creates panic, creates a crash. And then the same thing happens. And it's happened.
Yeah.
The Great Depression in 2008 were identical, and the behavior was identical, and the cultural swings were identical. And that economic theory seems to apply to it because it's a grand scale of how sort of people as a group think. You could bring it down to how we as individuals can sometimes.
It can be.
Yep.
And I think he's a good example of that. So then the question really is, how will it affect him?
Mm-hmm.
And he can go a few different ways with this now. You know, how it started off, the initial reaction has been a bit shit. If I'm looking at an athlete mm-hmm. wanting to mm-hmm. go on and live up to his potential and what he could become, it's like, you know, like I'm not even sure what that stuff is, yeah. and I don't know how to pronounce it.
Which
no
said,
responsibility yeah. at all. Yeah. God's path. God has yeah. a way of mm-hmm. you know, this is all part of a bigger plan.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not good stuff to be hearing mm-hmm. if that's the initial reaction. Now, like we were saying with Aldo and Frankie, maybe that's just what he's saying, and then what he's actually doing mm-hmm. is completely different.
Right.
Hopefully, yeah. that's what it is, but. It's crucial. What kind of people does he have around him? That's going to affect how it, that's going to have a huge impact on how it affects him. What kind of advice he's getting? Whether he's just trying to get this behind him, or whether he's trying to let this seep in what actually happened, and then truly, you know, make improvements. But he's had plenty of chances before yeah. to make improvements.
I can think of in my. You know, I'm closer to 60 than I am 30. So, you know, I'll be 47 this year. And in my adult life, it's 25 years. I can think of two people that dramatically affected their life that I saw in similar ways. A guy was caught cheating on his wife and he had children. And once he got caught, he freaked out. I never loved you in the first place. This nonsense. We just freaked out and just took off. That is one natural reaction to that. And another guy, and this doesn't end well. The other guy said he was sorry, it'll never happen again, let's go to the – pulled it all together until it became stable, and then 3 or 4 years in the future got caught again. Those are – and you hope that there's a third example that I've never met where somebody turned their life around and had the best life ever. But those two examples are very common examples of how people screw up big things in their life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And it's not to say that there won't be more fuck-ups to come. Mm-hmm. There will. Of course, everyone does. But on this scale, at this level and such kind of – and you might say – like the driving stuff and the coke test and the hit and run and now this, they're all different, but they're all mm-hmm. kind of similar mm-hmm. stuff. The reaction can be, right, okay, I really genuinely need to get things mm-hmm. fixed up here. So who have I got around me that's good, that's not good? I need to clean house a little bit there. What does this career mean to me? Uh-huh. What do I want my legacy to be? Do I want it to be, you know, someone who... Do I want it to be money that I have, or do I want it to be the greatest of all time? And you can have both, obviously, uh-huh. if you're the greatest of all time. What does it really mean to you? Do you love what you're doing still? Why are you doing the stuff you did in the first place? He'll know with the steroid stuff if it's been with it throughout his whole career. Or if it's a new thing, you know, you can speculate mm-hmm. on that, and it's you know yeah. whatever the reason is, but he can go a few different ways with it, but he needs to be honest first, and he can't keep like that idea that it's all part of God's plan. Immediately, you're getting rid of any responsibility.
You're saying,
then,
yeah, this is well, yeah. It's in someone other power's hands now.
Yeah, yeah,
it's not in mine.
It's not in mine. Yeah. Thou shalt not take estrogen blockers. It's not in the commandments. So what was I supposed to do?
Yeah, what was I supposed to do? That's funny. Well, hopefully, I mean, well, it's just going to be one of those things. Unless he decides, I'm just leaving. I don't want to be around people. You know, I'm going to go do something else. Unless that's the case, this is going to go on for a long time. In one way. The other, hopefully it's in a good way. We've only got a few, maybe 10 or 12 or 15 minutes left, but there was a couple of things that I was thinking I wanted to talk to you about. And I don't know if we'll get one next week because I'm going to a cottage for a break, which would be amazing. Although I love my job. But Lawler was something I wanted to talk about, but you know, we were talking about it, and I'll take your insight and I'll work it into the breakdown about Lawler instead. We may still have time. The other one is, when I look at Brock Lesnar so I analyze fighting. I go in, I'm obsessed with it. I love it. I think there's beautiful things about it. And whatever I find, I put out there. And so sometimes I break down technique, and sometimes I break down the big scale of the game, and sometimes I'm really interested in the physical stuff. And we do this show, and something has become very important to me. But they're all different. But when you look at the technical stuff of Brock Lesnar. He breaks rules that are different structures of how you win fights now, fundamental pillars of what it is to be a high-level fighter. He breaks those rules. Does he do that with what we think is the best way to be to fight mentally? Do the mental things that he shows, the way he expresses himself, does he seem to be a category of one mentally as well?
He's very unique mentally. It's one of the questions we got, and it's another good one because it's an interesting way of looking at this fight, the Mark Hunt fight, from Jamie Rebner. Did Brock's mindset of not looking too past this fight allow him to be more relaxed?
Great. That's a great question.
Because it was just kind of, I'm going to go in and do this one, and then we'll see what happens after that. Mm-hmm. And there's no, got to win this one, and that's going to get me a title shot.
Now, that might be for contractual reasons he says that, not showing his hand to Dana.
For sure.
There could be other reasons, but it seemed real. And at least he said it enough that it felt somewhat real to him.
Yeah, so let's go on the assumption that it is real.
Yeah, sure.
It helps a lot, for sure, if you're putting everything into this fight, and you can focus just on this fight, and you can, like, be relaxed about it and prepare for it fully, and it's your own divided attention. Because I've had the extreme case where I have fighters come to me and say, okay, I've got fights booked, one for August, whatever, and one for October, whatever. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
And so the first thing we address is the fact that you've got two fights, so let's put the second one away for now.
You have one fight.
You have one fight coming up. You pick up the other one afterwards or whatever. But you need to do that. Uh-huh. So that's the extreme. But no matter what fight you're doing, you've got another one coming up.
One day.
You know, you don't know when it is or who it's going to be, but there's going to be another fight around the corner, unless it's your retirement fight. But
you can change your mind.
Yeah. Manny Pacquiao is back now.
Right.
So, Brock, if it is that thing where it was just this one fight, that helps for sure. Then you put everything into this, you know, in terms of preparation and wanting to, you know, show what you can be truly capable of. And, like compared to the sickness before, this is what I am now. Whatever I produce here, this is who I am. And then just all the focus goes into that, all the prep goes into that. It means everything. That helps for sure. That's great in terms of motivation, in terms of the focus, in terms of the performance. It's a great way to be. So that could have been, you know, a big part of it. But your thing about him being unique and a special kind of a guy.
So the reason I ask, and I'll just sort of touch on it super quick. Everybody's like, well, he's a better wrestler. Even high-level wrestlers talk about the fact that he overachieved. He wasn't as technically good a wrestler as many of the wrestlers he beat. He beat them, and he is not as good a mixed martial arts fighter as any of the people he beat. And I know that we could debate that, but the fact is martial arts were designed to beat the bigger, stronger man. The martial artists who fought him were better martial artists using tools designed to defeat him. But he defeats him because the black belt is supposed to be able to defeat the giant, powerful white belt. Well, he's a giant, powerful blue belt. Mm-hmm. He's not as good as you, but he's good. And he's big and strong, and he believes in his stuff, and he's ultra committed to it. And my thinking when it comes to the mindset part is he seems driven to destroy. Now, and what's interesting about that to me is we wouldn't recommend that to me or Chase or you, but it feels authentically him.
He's
hidden in a bush and he wants to come out and destroy people.
Yeah.
Doesn't that feel real, that he is unique, has a unique motivation?
Yeah, no, I definitely think it is. And I do think his size is a big part of that. You know, his athletic talents are a big part of his mindset. They fuel that. And if he looks at the evidence of what I can do that. Look at me, I can do that. And then he's gone and done it, though. You know?
Right. So it's real. Like, it's not
it just
maybe or wasn't an accident. He beats these people soundly and with the collection of things that he is.
Mm-hmm.
He beats them.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
He's always done, like you're saying,
it's amazing.
In college wrestling. He played for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah. Wasn't as good a football player.
Yeah. He played in preseason. He wasn't that good, but he made plays in games against other NFL players. He went on to be UFC champion. It is, like, I'm sure there's a direct link between the size, the athleticism, and the work and everything he puts in. But then when you do something that you shouldn't be able to do, and you do it, then it just makes anything possible for you a little bit.
Well, and then after that, once it's been two or three or four or five times, it's somebody is saying you shouldn't be able to do it, but that's not factual. I do do it. I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's super cool to me. And just last thing on that is I've met people who had no real mental training but were fighters. And back in sort of the 90s and early 2000s, some Canadian guys. And a few of them, there was this mindset that a little group of them had. And they said, when I go to look at fighting my opponent, they started. And Sean Pearson is one of them. He was a good high-level Canadian. I fought in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And he said that he would start with looking at the guy and just going, the fact of the matter is, I know with 100% certainty that if me and that guy were in a prison cell and only one of us is coming out alive, it's me. And that in whatever way, with whatever limited exposure to other lines of thinking, he started with that. And he made – and to him, that was true. And then everything else came from that. And to Brock Lesnar, that is 100% true with every human being on earth. If you put – in his mind, you put Brock Lesnar in a jail cell with any walking man on earth, and he knows if it comes down to it, he's going to be the one to walk out there. He starts with that mindset, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that makes sense as to who he is and what he says and everything and how he acts and all that kind of stuff. That's not to say that even in that he didn't feel fear of Mark Hunt. He did.
Yeah.
He would have done. He would have felt the doubts and the nerves. That, like, you don't want to mix those two up. He still thinks he's going to come out and he's going to be the one that's going to be standing at the end. But he has that fear of getting knocked out. Yeah. He has that fear of what the other guy brings. He has doubts and nerves and stuff. But he's still going to do it anyways. He still has the belief far outweighs any of those doubts.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope he fights more. I didn't care the first time, the first pass. But now when I've gone back and watched those wins, they're all real. There's not a fluke among them. It's just this big, powerful alpha monster overcomes high-level martial arts skill with his decent martial arts skills. Decent fighting skills.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
It's very cool.
Yeah. I think we're out of time.
One thing, if we can touch it for like a minute, Sage Northcutt.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was
amazing, amazing.
We called him out a little bit after the last fight with Barbarina, and this was like, he had plenty of opportunities to quit in that fight.
Yeah,
plenty of them. Mm-hmm. The armbar alone, the Kimura, loads of opportunities, and it's very, very cool to see someone who has grown from that experience. Like we talked about Robbie Lawler, fifth round against Hendricks in the first fight, and he's grown from that now.
Yeah.
Sage was found himself back in those kind of situations again.
Yeah.
And he showed a resolve and a toughness that he can grow from now.
Oh, so valuable, so amazing. Like, I was just so thrilled for him. And I said out loud in the room that I was in, oh, God, you can feel them folding. Because as it started going bad, and then he went to the other spot, and then he was there, and then he was there, you could feel the option.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. And instead, through whatever, you hope it isn't just because, well, I'm healthier now so I can do it, which is why people's reaction, like, see, he was sick before, is missing the point. Yeah. You'll be sick again.
Yeah.
And are we going to lose every time we're sick? Are we going to lose every time we're injured? No, we need to be able to do it under the circumstances. But that moment where it's like, oh, no, God, I feel like he's going to fold. And then not only did he not fold, he got stronger. Each little test that he passed of his own, I can get out of this, it hurts, but it's not hurting so bad that the fight is over, it made him stronger throughout the fight, and it'll make him way better. That's the best performance he could have had, in my opinion. If he knocked the guy out in a minute, it wouldn't have been
as good. Wouldn't have learned as much at all as he can learn from this one, for sure. Now, he still needs to go back and learn the technical things as to why he got caught in that in the first place.
Yeah.
But he can do so with a little bit more, there's more room for growth now than there was before.
Yeah, it was wicked. It's just really joyed for that guy. And I think people misunderstand sometimes when you're looking at, we're looking without judgment as most we can a lot of the time. And you see the first time, you're like, that's bad, It's not that you want it to be bad. In fact, you want him to do well.
Yeah.
I've met him a couple times. He's a lovable, charming, adorable dude. So that was nice to see.
Yeah.
That was nice to see. Not as nice as Jose Aldo, just going from greatness to challenge to super greatness. That was amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That was maybe my performance of the weekend. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool. Just like you said, because where he came from and where he was.
Eddie Alvarez. That was my All right, we got to get going. It's a drag every time we have to go because it's fun hanging out with my friend and it's fun hanging out with you guys. But please check out David Mullins, sportpsychology.com, and he's David Mullins MMA on Twitter. I'm Robin Black MMA on Twitter. Please keep sending us those questions. They're killer. And thanks for hanging out with us and giving us your feedback. And we will see you guys next time.